From Los Angeles, California, this is Coast to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for George Norrie and George Knapp, and we have what I think is going to be a blockbuster show. In the first hour, we'll be talking with George Langworthy, whose new documentary chronicles the mysterious disappearance of the honeybees, which threatens one-third of our nation's food supply. And in the remainder of the show, we'll be talking with Tom Carey and Don Schmidt about the greatest cover-up in American history, the Roswell crash of 1947. And we'll be presenting new material, new audio clips from the witnesses themselves, some of which that have never been played on the radio before. So some new information coming along in just a few minutes. But first, a quick look at headlines. The wildfire in Arizona is now abating slightly, say officials. It's now 6% contained. That's up from yesterday. And additionally, 7,000 residents were allowed to return home. This is interesting. The International Monetary Fund says it has been targeted by a sophisticated cyber attack. Official says that there was a major breach of its system. And this breach was a hack that was designed to install software to create a digital insider presence. Now, of course, the IMF fund holds sensitive economic data about countries and its operations. And they say their systems are fully functional, but it makes you wonder. Now, this is an interesting story from Everett, Washington. The police department there has been attacked by crows. They have been dive bombing their officers. And they say it is not going well for them up there. It's something that they think has to do with the nesting area of the crows. And crows are able to recognize people. And since the officers are all dressed alike, they've all been being attacked by these crows. One officer tried to scare them off by turning on his sirens. And the result was the crows littered his cruisers with droppings. Didn't go well. There is some news that has gone across the country in the past couple weeks. Jeff Conaway, star of Grease and Taxi, passed away 2 weeks ago. He was a friend of mine. He actually came over to my house a couple years ago to do an interview for my London show. And since we're going to be talking about UFOs later, I thought I'd reach into my archives and play a quick clip of him talking about an extraordinary UFO experience that he had out in Palm Springs. In fact, he saw black helicopters, and he says this thing lifted him off the ground. Play that right when we get back. Jeff Conaway was known for his roles in Taxi and Broadway, and of course the legendary film Grease with John Travolta. He passed away several weeks ago from complications due to his longtime dependency on prescription pills. But before he got in such a bad way, he was one of the most amazing guys you would ever meet. He came over to my house to do an interview for my London show. And he was engaging, and we remained friends. I went to his house for a birthday party, and the Temptations were playing. I mean, he really was one of these guys that lived life to its nth degree. He couldn't get enough. And I think ultimately that's what put him on the slow ride to an early demise. But when he came over to my house, he recounted a story that I don't think he's told anybody. And it was a remarkable UFO story, so I thought I'd play it because it gives you sort of another dimension to this guy who had all kinds of experiences that could only be described as metaphysical, and this one is downright extraterrestrial.
Well, you mentioned that you love sci-fi. Any personal, strange, or metaphysical, paranormal things happen to you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to know what people were going to say before they said it, and it used to freak my family out. And they said, stop doing that. Stop it. I saw a UFO once. I had a house in Palm Springs, mm-hmm. and I had these dogs and a cat. So I'm outside walking them about 4 o'clock in the morning in this little place called Snow Creek Village, which was in the middle of a wildlife preserve, a good place for me to be. Mm. And I look up at the sky, mm-hmm. and I see this bright, bright star. And wow, that's something else. I've never seen that before. And all of a sudden, it moves. What the heck is that? You know? And then it moves again, zigzags. I said, oh my gosh, that's a UFO. And all of a sudden this wind comes up out of nowhere, and I float off the ground for about 3 to 6 feet. I'm thinking, it is a UFO, and they want me. Oh my God, no, I'm not ready to come. And so all of a sudden I see two jet fighters coming out of towards Palm Springs, I guess, which would be east, and they're following it. They go up to a certain point, and then they just veer off and leave it alone. So I said, that's it.
Yeah, that was a funny little clip that he really shocked me and the other people in the room. And I just thought I'd play that. It's appropriate to the show we're doing tonight. And just a little tribute to Jeff. I hope you're well wherever you are. Now, our first guest is someone who also likes to explore mysteries. His name is George Langworthy. He's the director of a new film called The Vanishing of the Bees. You might have seen this a couple years ago on a 60 Minutes report. And there is a new phenomenon with bees. There is this thing called CCD, Colony Collapse Disorder. We don't know why these colonies are simply dying out and the bees are just disappearing. And it's a big deal because 30-40% of the bees are dying off every year. And they account for the pollination of over a third of all the food consumed in the United States. Now, to look at this mystery a little closer, we're going to bring on George. George, welcome to Coast AM.
Thanks so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Great to have you. So you are the director of this new documentary. What started your interest in this?
It's very much what you said. It's the mystery aspect of it that first drew my attention. And not only are the bees, they're not just dying. There's no dead bees around these hives. The beehives are abandoned, except the other mysterious fact is that they leave the queen behind. They're leaving their babies behind. You have about 30,000 bees in a bee colony on average, and they just take off within the span of a week, sometimes a day, sometimes within even 3 hours. And in our film, we have scientists who are doing studies, and these are, you know, PhD scientists who say, yeah, we went to the hive. 3 hours later, all the bees were gone.
Now, when was this first being reported?
In the United States, the story broke in early 2007, and is a global phenomenon. And during the course of making this documentary, we did learn that France had experienced the same phenomenon about 10 years early in the late 90s.
It was a bee farmer, David Hackenberg from Pennsylvania, who really takes credit for broaching the story, right?
David Hackenberg was very brave and came forward and told everyone he was having these massive problems when a lot of other beekeepers were experiencing the same problems and not saying anything about it because they were afraid of people thinking that they were going to say that they were bad beekeepers and they were doing a bad job. But he was a veteran. He's a very professional, excellent bee manager of his hives, friends with scientists, friends with farmers, and he had no qualms about stepping forward and saying, hey, folks, something is really wrong here. And once he did, the floodgates kind of opened up.
Although he met with some resistance early on, I think a lot of people didn't believe him, right?
Absolutely. A lot of people thought that maybe he was just a bad beekeeper. I don't think that they disbelieved that his bees were in trouble. But even people, even beekeepers, and we were able to document this in our film with the greatest instance of colony collapse disorder ever recorded that took place here in California. One of the world's biggest beekeepers, or probably the world's biggest beekeeper, and a lot of beekeepers were very dismissive of him. They said it was, you know, instead of CCD, they called it PPM, which they referred to as piss poor management, and said that it was all his fault. And, you know, then the next season, they themselves were struck and really found out that this was not a joke and ended up apologizing to Hackenberg.
Now, a lot of people might not be familiar with how important bees are to pollinating the crops. Tell us what kind of role bees play in sort of the staple crops that Americans enjoy every day.
One thing that we didn't realize going into this is that bees are trucked around the country to crops to pollinate them. There's, even in California, 1 million beehives are brought just for the almonds alone. And without these bees, which are a mobile pollination force, we wouldn't have most of our fruits and vegetables. And one of the main reasons is, even as all plant life evolved on the earth, bees evolved with flowering plants. And part of the relationship with bees and the plant kingdom is that bees go from flower to flower, take pollen from one flower to another, and that creates the fruit and the seed and the vegetables that we all reap the benefits of. And in today's modern agriculture system, the crops are in big monocultures. So local pollinators can't exist. There's nothing for them to eat throughout the year. So they have to bring bees there on a seasonal basis.
Yeah, these bees are trucked around the country in these big flatbeds. I mean, they can literally transport millions at a time, right?
Absolutely. They can put about 400 beehives on a semi, and there's 30,000 bees in each hive.
So a lot of this is something that's been going on for quite a long time. The truth is that there's just not enough bees already to do the work to keep everything going. And now with these die-offs, it really threatens the entire industry.
That's true. And that's a crazy fact, but there are not enough bees in the United States to pollinate the crops of the United States. And one of the things we highlight in the film is that people might find crazy, but we are importing bees from Australia every year. They put them on a plane and fly them from Sydney to San Francisco.
See, that's kind of strange, because these bees are different to used to a different season. Their spring, their summer is our winter. I wonder if it's confusing for the little guys.
Well, bees are a little bit like people in the fact that you can kind of put them in a different spot and they wake up in the morning and go around and see what's going on. But yes, it is. It's very much more confusing because of exactly what you said. They're at the tail end of their season and used to be going into a hibernation period, but they're brought here and it's spring again and it's supposed to be, you know, they're just put back into action. And bees are a workforce. You know, they're working on our behalf, and they're this kind of unseen, unspoken about migrant labor force responsible for our fruits and vegetables.
It's another cautionary tale of tinkering with Mother Nature. It just doesn't work. Well, give us an idea of the very sophisticated colony life that goes on. I mean, they really have a very elaborate system going on, these bees. They're just not little simple worker bees, all of them.
No, and that's a very, very good point, Rob. There's thousands of species of bees, but honeybees in particular live in a colony, and scientists consider a bee colony to be one organism. You see, a honeybee, if it's away from the hive, away from the colony for 24 hours, it cannot survive. It's not like a bird or a moth or a butterfly. It must live with the colony. The queen presides over the colony and lays 1,000 eggs a day. When each bee is born, they immediately set to work. During the lifespan of a bee, and most of the bees are female, the drone bees really just serve to mate with the queen, but they instinctively go from role to role in the hive. They'll start off as a nurse bee and help care for the baby bees. Then they go to the front of the hive and become a guard bee. Then they'll go out and forage and gather water or nectar. And all of this happens very instinctively. Bees communicate by dancing. They can communicate basically down to the inch within a 5-mile radius, just in this figure eight dance that they do to communicate to other bees when they find a nectar source, when they find a blossoming bed of daisies or jasmine or any kind of flower. They can come back to the hive and tell all the other bees, hey, everyone, there's this excellent source of food over here. And we're talking about great distances, and bees just do this little dance, and they can go exactly to where that nectar source is. And scientists have even moved in the course of the day, experimented. They take a beehive, they move it over 3 feet to the left, and bees returning back from the fields will go to the spot where it was initially.
Interesting. Yeah, their communication system is intriguing. They must have. Now, when you say they do a dance, what are we talking about here? Because is it the way they flap their wings? Because you would think that they have to communicate a lot of information in a very brief amount of time.
But dance is one way among many that they communicate. They have a very intricate system of chemical communication through pheromones. They can tell each other what's going on in the world, what's going on in the hive. They communicate with their antenna. They come back from a nectar source, and they can smell with their antenna, and they have an amazing sense of smell. So one bee can share the scent of the nectar source or pollen source with the other bees just by exchanging these tiny pollen grains, which are incredibly minuscule. And they have all sorts of communication. They have all sorts of complex activities going in a hive. They can cool a hive. A beehive is kept at a constant temperature, which is very close to the human body temperature. In the winter, bees gather together and they shiver their bodies and generate heat. In the summer, you can see them lined up along the front edge of the hive, flapping their wings like crazy, fanning to cool the hive. If there's a virus in the hive or bacteria, the beehive will instinctively heat up, just like the human body would get a fever, to help combat these disease.
It's funny, when you get enough of them together, it really is just one organism. It's astonishing. I don't know that there are many other examples of that, and especially not with mammals, but perhaps with other insects.
Certainly the ants have a colonial system, and you think about the queen ant, and they all exist in that way. But bees have are operating on a whole nother level. And throughout history, even ancient man, you know, some of the early Paleolithic cave drawings are bees. Ancient religions were very reverent of bees because, of course, back in the day, there was no other source of anything sweet. Beeswax was a source of light. A beehive was this amazing, amazing resource for the developing, you know, primitive man up till the Middle Ages, up until even today. I mean, obviously now we're relying on them not for wax for light so much, but to grow our food.
Now, there's a lot of people who love honey in their tea, but it's been said that honey actually contains most of the things that you need to live.
Honey is very medicinal. It's an incredible food source, and it's buying honey from your local beekeeper is an amazing way to combat allergies. Honey is the one food that will never spoil. They've opened the tombs of ancient Egyptian kings, and there are pots of honey in there that are still unspoiled.
Wow. It probably wouldn't last that long in my fridge. Yeah, it has enzymes, vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants. It really is sort of a magical elixir. So now that it has been in the public, that there's been the strange disappearance, I think that the reaction, you talked about France earlier, over there was extraordinary. I mean, we had beekeepers were throwing their hives on the government grounds, weren't they?
Yes, the French beekeepers were holding protests, because they suspected a new class of pesticides to be at the root of the problem. And they were holding protests out in front of the Eiffel Tower, at Bayer Crop Science, who manufactures these pesticides. And the French government actually listened to them and ended up banning the pesticides, and several other European governments as well.
Yeah. Sometimes you really have to have a loud voice, and demonstrations do work. How come there hasn't been that similar type of response here in the U.S.?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, there was just a, there have been people gathering together, and there was petitions delivered to the EPA with millions of signatures calling for the ban of these systemic pesticides. And the character of the American beekeeper is just a little bit different. They're very, you know, they're kind of iconoclasts. They like to be on their own. They like to be outdoors. They like to be with their bees. They're kind of farmers, and they're really not politically driven people as a general, you know, description. So they really didn't get up and, you know, burn their hives in Washington, D.C., but they have gone to Washington, D.C. and appeared in Senate panels and hearings. And you know, I heard in your intro you're talking about the government cover-ups, and this is one of the instances in which it's really pretty much out there for everyone to see in plain light that the U.S. government, and in particular the Environmental Protection Agency, is not taking the steps required to make sure that these pesticides being used are safe for people and are really facing this undue influence of these corporations manufacturing these toxic chemicals.
Hold it right there, George. I want to talk to you more about this and some of the reasons behind the very mysterious disappearance of the honeybees. More right after the break. Stay tuned. We are talking about the strange disappearance of thousands, nay, millions of honeybees. They're dying off and disappearing at an alarming rate. And the word really is disappearing because they're not being found next to the hives. They're not being found in the hives. They're simply gone. And once the bees leave a particular hive, other bees won't even come back. They won't even eat or take the honey that might be still left in there. Very strange. We're talking with George Langworthy. George, this documentary, The Vanishing of the Bees, it's very well done. It's even narrated by Ellen Page, the actress from Inception. She does a wonderful job. This is something that is a passionate issue for a lot of people, isn't it? You there, George?
Absolutely, uh-huh. I am. And we're very passionate about it. And we should be, because bees are so important, and they're not only important to our food supply, they also serve as a sentinel species, indicating the overall health of our environment. And we think, you know, it's wonderful to be on Coast to Coast, because we know that it's been brought up on the show before. And in fact, when we were on a shoot in rural Illinois one evening, we walked into the lobby of the hotel there, and they were listening to Coast to Coast, and one of our main characters, David Hackenberg, was on the show talking about the bees.
That's right. Well, you mentioned before that in France there was a lot of demonstration, and they did it outside the offices of Bayer, because they were the ones that made the certain pesticides that they thought was responsible or partly responsible for the disappearance of the bees. Has Bayer released that same pesticides into practice here in the United States?
Yes, and one of the real signs that this is at the root of it, well, there's certainly even new evidence come forth by USDA scientists showing that the bees are closing off pollen infected with this pesticide in a special way that they've never documented before, and that that is a common link with all of the cases of colony collapse. But yes, one of the real common sense signals is that this phenomenon, colony collapse disorder, where bees start to mysteriously vanish from their hives, started to take place the very same time that these new pesticides, systemic pesticides, came onto the marketplace. And they call them systemic because a lot of people think of a pesticide being sprayed on a plant, but these are put into the system of the plant. They go into the tissues of the plant. They are expressed in the nectar and the pollen. And the bees then take that nectar and pollen back into their hives, so they're literally taking pesticides back into their beehives, into their food stores.
Hmm. And this is something that over time you would have thought the bees might have adjusted or built up an immunity to, or do you think there was sort of a critical mass?
I think that that's exactly right, because over time they accumulate. The other factor about these pesticides is that they have a very long life. Early, these topical sprayed pesticides were incredibly toxic, but they would dissolve, they would break down. These systemic pesticides last and last, and even up to years and years in the soil. So the plants take them up through the roots, and they just build up and build up. And one of the things that happens is, yes, it's very much like a critical mass. The bees have accumulate so much of this in a beehive that the system starts to collapse. And one of the ways that the pesticides work is not to just kill a bug dead upon contact outright. They weaken their immune system. They destroy their short-term memory. They impair their navigation ability. They have these sublethal effects. The designs of these new pesticides is to work in a sublethal manner to undermine the overall health of these insects and wipe them out in that way.
Mm. I wonder if there are other suspicious things that people have pointed to for the reasons why these bees are disappearing. I've heard theories about electromagnetic radiation, cell phones, even chemtrails.
I think that those are all good questions. And one of the reasons we wanted to do a full-length documentary, you know, a 90-minute film, is because this is a very multifaceted issue. Why are the bees disappearing? Well, one column in a newspaper isn't enough to answer that. There's biological reasons, there's agricultural reasons, there's political reasons, there's cultural reasons, and there's economic reasons. And to address specifically electromagnetic frequencies, cell phones, you know, we're not dismissing the fact that those could be harmful to bees or to human health or to the health of our environment at all. However, the symptoms of colony collapse disorder are very specific. And bees, in fact, you know, where I'd mentioned the largest record of colony collapse disorder ever recorded, 40,000 beehives were found empty. Well, in that particular yard, you can't even get cell phone reception there. So although it might impact the bees' health, it's not the specific cause of CCD.
Now, there has been widely reported this phenomenon of chemtrails. They've been photographed, the planes have been photographed. It's something that more and more is being proven to be absolutely true. Do you think that this might be part of the reason? I'm sure someone has brought this theory to you.
Well, here's a good answer to that. And we've spoken to that with a lot of people and given it consideration. But the consistent observation of the beekeepers, and these are the guys who are with their bees all day long. They grew up keeping bees, often multi-generational. You know, a lot of these people have been in the business that was started by their great-grandfather. Well, they bring their bees out to these monoculture farming arenas and where they're doing corn, soy, wheat, Monsanto products, and using these pesticides, and the bees fall apart. If the bees are kept in mountainous areas, areas in the woods, off, you know, and I myself live up in Topanga in the mountains outside of LA, and we have quite a clear view of the sky and what many people, you know, consider to be chemtrails being sprayed in this area. So the effect and appearance of colony collapse disorder would be more widespread if chemtrails were at the root, and they might be part of it and they might not. We don't really draw conclusions in our documentary. We're following the scientists that are looking at the causes and the beekeepers. But it seems to be very geographically connected to these monoculture farming areas where the bees are being taken. And I don't think that those chemtrails are specifically as you know, located in those limited areas.
You mentioned Monsanto. Now, what about this? This is a big concern for people, this genetically modified food. It's been in use for 30 years plus in some cases. What's the connection between GMO food and the disappearance of bees, if any?
There's a big connection. And it has a lot more to do with the pesticides that they use. Monsanto is working hand in hand with Bayer Crop Science, Syngenta, BASF, and these chemical companies. Roundup, of course, Monsanto manufactures herbicides. You know, all these are designed to kill bugs, to kill weeds. This approach to growing food by declaring war instead of working in harmony with nature is the reason that bees are disappearing, without a doubt, in my book.
What is the reality for a farmer when it comes to pesticides? Is it something that is simply a must when it comes to having vast crops? Is it an absolute necessity? In other words, would they be out of business if they didn't use these chemicals?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's hard for farmers to shift gears so suddenly. I think part of the reason, it's part of a lot of the problems, is that this is a mindset that people have, and they have a lot of trouble escaping from that. Organic farming certainly works. Permaculture certainly works. Can these people just slam on the brakes and switch over in a year? No, they can't. And they kind of buy into this system. And can you grow food without pesticides? Yes, absolutely. Can you have high yields? Yes, absolutely. In fact, some of the most profitable farms are farmers that are growing organic and permaculture style, you know, using organic agriculture and permaculture farming. These people using Monsanto seeds and all these fertilizers and pesticides, and you know, they're not making money. They're producing higher yields per acre, but that doesn't result. They're often having to have side jobs. I have a friend who's working on a documentary specifically on GMO crops, And he was just interviewing people. They said, well, you know, back in the day, we used to get 60 bushels an acre, and now we get 150 bushels an acre. And he said, well, does that mean you're making more money? And they said, no, actually, I have to have another job. They have a side job in order to farm because all their money is going to Monsanto and these other companies that are making these products. But that's a little bit of a long answer, and maybe all these are long answers. But you don't need pesticides to grow food.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned, of course, Bayer, the pharmaceutical companies. They all have great connections and a powerful lobbying force within Washington. So I'm wondering, the USDA B-Lab has been exploring this, right, Jeff Pettis?
That's correct, and he's the one with that paper I mentioned.
Right. He reported in 2008 there was a 36% die-off, for example, in the bee colonies. Now, to my understanding, they still haven't pinned down a source. They're looking at fungus and viruses and bacteria. Where are they? What's the current state of their progress?
Well, it's a very interesting point, and I think it really does reflect on how this undue corporate influence is impacting our government. And, you know, that issue applies to all fronts, not just the bees. However, in this case, the research, a lot of the funding for research, they want to find it to be a pathogen, a mite. And I will say, yes, this is a complex issue again. And again, this is why we did our documentary, Vanishing of the Bees, because there's so much information to wrap your head around. There are mites that are very problematic to the bees. There are viruses. There are bacteria. There are all these other factors influencing the health of the bees, lack of forage, poor nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, these mites you mentioned, do you think some of this pesticide is causing an imbalance in some of these pests, these mites, that cause their populations to go out of control?
I think that what they do is, that's exactly what happens, is pesticides weaken the immune system of bees. They're weakening the bees' health, and they ordinarily have systems in place in a beehive that are very hygienic. They can deal with invasive species. They can deal with pathogens. But because they're weakened by these pesticides, which even on their product description for the target insects, it describes how they work and how they take out, how they cause the demise of these insects. And it's basically by weakening their overall health so that other elements will come into play and take them out.
It's a very delicate balance. I was most intrigued to learn that bees are covered with fur, for all intents and purposes, and when they fly, they build up a static charge so that when they land on these flowers, all the pollen sticks to them. It's a wonderful natural harmony.
It's incredible. And the ways that bees are designed, as I said, over billions of years, bees have evolved with flowering plants. And that's one of the reasons that our landscape looks the way it does. And yes, they fly, they develop static electricity, the pollen just naturally jumps onto their bodies. Then they go to the flower, they get the nectar from the flower, and it's like a reward encouraging them to go to another flower. And then as a reward for the bee, then the plant gets pollinated and gets to propagate.
Now, we talked a little bit about the undue influence of some of these very large multinational conglomerates. What do you think is the real truth that's going on? Do you think that they're is a danger when it comes to exploring this insofar as it might uncover some nefarious acts by one of these large corporations that might cause them to be open to lawsuits? Do you think there is an attempt to cover up the real truth behind the disappearance of these bees?
I think that there is, in some regard, an attempt to cover up the fact that these systemic pesticides are at the root of this problem. And the real problem is that the Environmental Protection Agency is just allowing it to happen. It's a little more overt in many ways because these chemical companies, the Environmental Protection Agency, what most people might not know is that they don't do any testing to determine the safety of products. They rely on the manufacturer of a chemical to determine whether or not that chemical is safe for use. And of course, if you're standing to profit billions of dollars and you hire your own scientists to do these studies, what do you think the results are going to say?
Unbelievable. So this really is just something that's happening really in almost any industry that deals with these dangerous chemicals that are designed to interact with our ecosystem, designed to do one thing, but really never does. I mean, there's always side effects, right?
Absolutely, and it's very important to keep in mind that side effects don't have to be someone just drops dead. The effect of these pesticides are sublethal on bees. The effects on humans, we have this huge rise in autism. We have cancer. We have things caused by environmental toxins, asthma, allergies. People are experiencing all kinds of ills in their health, and they're hard to pinpoint. They're hard to say it's exactly this. They're not causing people to drop dead, but the same exact phenomenon is occurring with bees. You know, they get disoriented. Their short-term memory is gone. Their immune system is compromised.
What can people do if they want to help out? How can you mobilize people's support?
One of the main focuses of our documentary is to tell people that they don't have to wait for the government to do something, that there are solutions that we all can do every day. And at this stage, I think raising awareness and letting people know about this issue is a huge step. Letting people know, hey, the bees are disappearing. It's this massive cry of alarm that we need to pay attention to. You know, a lot of people can make a big difference by their own diet. If you eat organic produce, shop at the farmer's market, community-supported agriculture, or even grow your own food, you could be having a huge impact on the environment. And then another way is stopping pesticide use at home, in businesses, in institutions like schools and city parks. There's tons of pesticides that people are applying in their home and lawn. And you can find much more effective, safer, and less expensive remedies for all these. If you search online, you can find organic pest remedies, organic pest control, and oftentimes they're much more effective. Mm-hmm. It's just that corporations can't put a patent on them, so they're not pushed out into the marketplace in the same manner.
George, give us a website where people can go check out your documentary.
Our website is vanishingbees.com, and the name of the documentary is Vanishing of the Bees.
Okay, great. Listen, I really appreciate you coming on. People should check it out. I saw it. I thought it was very educational and alarming and informative. I mean, it's a real phenomenon. So do check that out. And coming right back after the break, we'll talk a little bit about what's coming up in the next hour. We have a very special show planned. I want your inputs. I want your questions. And we'll be playing some never-before-revealed information about the crash at Roswell. There is a lot of information about Roswell. It has been out there. But we're going to get to some new information coming up in the next hour. We'll be talking with Tom Carey and Don Schmidt, the world's leading experts, really, in the Roswell crash. And the reason why it's important is because you got to remember how it fits in with the history of the United States. It was like this UFO not only crashed in the soil, but it crashed into our collective psyche. And I think it caused a sort of national cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is described as the uncomfortable feeling caused by holding conflicting ideas simultaneously. And that's exactly what happened. Why? Because when it first happened, the Air Force says, yeah, we found this disc. Here it is. It happened. You can all fully engage something that you probably were thinking anyway about our place in the universe. And then they turned around and said, no, it never happened. Go away. And I think this caused a rift in the national psyche. Not only that, but it set the tone for all other extraterrestrial events to follow. They all fell into this big dark hole. The Cold War mentality took over, and it has been there ever since. And I really think it stunted the growth of a lot of people, because a lot of people are waiting for the government to say it's okay to believe in a larger universe. And I think the cover-up that resulted from this mentality is nothing short than a crime against humanity. We got some great new audio clips from the witnesses themselves. Your questions, your thoughts, coming up right after the break. Stay tuned.